Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. I'll remind you, we are on SoundCloud and Facebook. And we're very happy now to be talking to Eve Engler. And I'll just urge you to go to eveengler.com, a terrific site, and particularly relevant right now. Eve has done a number of very timely articles we all need to be looking at. And well, Eve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I want to focus on the one that got my attention, April 22nd. Does the NDP want a war with Russia? And I have to say, I'm really glad you wrote it, because we are in this strange world where people tend to think that a social democratic party has high up on its priorities that the issue of keeping us out of war, keeping working people safe, seeing that they have good living, standard of living and health provided, and et cetera. But peace, used to Ford call it job one. But when I look at the Canadian Parliament, it is really something that needs your analysis, I think, because here we have the New Democratic Party really kind of beating on war drums on this issue of Russia and the Ukraine. That's your focus, by the way. It's, of course, a broader issue of NATO and all that. But tell us what your take is on their statements that they want to get Ukraine in NATO. They want more forces. They want to confront Russia. What's all that about?
Well, I think it's all about the fact that they are, as you pointed out, they're very militaristic just in general. Specifically, this is a play to the, bizarrely, but to the right-wing Ukrainian Canadians. And the interview that Heather McPherson, who is the deputy foreign affairs critic for the NDP, who's an MP in Edmonton, she gave this to, I think, New Pathway, which is a Ukrainian community newspaper. And she said explicitly the NDP wants Ukraine to begin the process of joining NATO. Also said that they want to beef up Canada's military mission in the Ukraine. Right now, there's about 200 Canadian troops that are supposed to be training Ukrainian forces. We know that those Ukrainian forces that Canada has been involved in training, both at the military level, also there's Canadian police there and funding, Canadian police funding. They're, it's full of neo-Nazi types that, glorify World War II figures that murdered Jews, murdered Poles in the Ukraine. So it's very unsavory lot, but Canada has been, very much supporting those forces. And throughout this period, over the past at least 7 years, but probably before that, the NDP has basically egged the Canadian government on, has always backed, military position. And it's also important to note, it's not just Canadian military in the Ukraine. There's also, 500 plus Canadian troops in Latvia that lead a NATO mission there. There's Canadian fighter jets that are consistently in Romania, Canadian naval vessel in the Baltic, a whole bunch of other small Canadian military contributions to countries that border Russia, and the NDP has gone along with this, and this is from a Russian perspective is obviously very provocative. The agreement that was made during the end of the fall of the Berlin Wall and the removal of Russian troops from other Eastern European countries was all on contingent on not moving NATO, 1 inch east. And now we have a situation where not only are most of the countries bordering Russia in NATO, but you have, North American troops stationed right on Russia's border. And the NDP is, you know, is backing this, and they make the unfortunately they make the Liberals almost look good on this. They're saying the Liberals aren't, you know, tough enough. They're, you know, so.
Yeah, that, we're speaking to Eve Engler.com. Yeah, not tough enough, and that is what gets me about this. Is so again, Social Democratic Party. Once upon a time, as your article points out, in 1969, they took a position, Canada should leave NATO. And here we are, they want more bayonets, you know, more planes, more. And I don't know, the part that strikes me, there are many, but is where's the political reasoning? First, you know, you point out that there is a little bit of pushback.
Mr. Sven Robinson.
Yeah, Sven Robinson has said, you know, really we shouldn't be in it. And he raises this really important, he gets into the gist of it. Why do we need to be surrounding countries, treating them as adversaries? There's nobody has demonstrated that that is necessary. But the leadership seems to have the bit in their teeth and they don't even want to hear about the, let's, you know, a background discussion, which your article provides, by the way.
No, I mean, that is definitely the case. It's important to note that, you know, the NDP members, there were resolutions to NDP or CCF, the NDP's predecessor conventions for right from the get-go, right from 1950, creation of NATO. The leadership at that point got the NDP or the CCF to back NATO, but it was controversial at every convention, and the oppositional voices got bigger, larger and larger over the years. And then finally the oppositional voices became so strong within the party that they passed that resolution in 1969. It's my understanding the membership never voted against that resolution calling for Canada to pull out of NATO. It's just a matter of Ed Broadbent, when he was looked like he might have a chance of actually winning the election, that they downgraded, that he basically tried to throw that resolution away, just kind of pack it away and put forward this new security statement. And in fact, there was even the Ontario NDP Council, I think, put out a motion of like censure against Ed Broadbent for having ignored the will of the membership in their resolution calling for the removal of NATO. But, you know, up until today, so, and this was a time, we should say that, you know, there was at least a like nominal justification for NATO. There was the Cold War, the nominal, right? And that's disappeared. But since that's disappeared, the hierarchy of the party has not become less supportive of NATO, but in fact has become more supportive of NATO, where, you know, like, you know, we were just talking about, they're actually calling for, you know, Ukraine to join NATO to further expand NATO. But there is dissent, there is some opposition within the party, people like Sven Robinson, who is a prominent former MP. There was a resolution at the NDP, recent NDP convention, calling for Canada to withdraw from NATO. But the, you know, the person who is the defense critic, Randall Garrison, is a, you know, staunch militarist. We have this procurement for the naval vessels, for 15 combatant surface naval vessels, that is just a total, you know, total chaos. I mean, this is something that initially was priced at, it was like 26 billion, and then they increased that up to 60 billion. Now the latest thing is it's going to be 77 billion. That's just the sticker price. The whole life cycle, the latest estimate is actually $286 billion. It's just the whole procurement on this issue is just a total catastrophe. They're arming these naval vessels with Tomahawk missiles that can be fired like 1,200 kilometers. I mean, just wildly violent naval vessels that they're pursuing. It's part of why the cost keeps going up and up and up. And you have complete silence from the NDP defense critic. You know, even from a strictly like, you know, procurement kind of angle, there's all kinds of reasons to be criticizing, let alone the question of what these naval vessels are going to be used for. But you have complete silence from Randall Garrison, and he basically, he views himself as an advocate for the military. I mean, he would, you know, he would frame that as, you know, for, you know, he to combat, you know, sexism within the military, or to combat, or to back up the lower ranks within the military. But he sees his objective as to be an advocate for the military, to the point where in 2017, when the NDP or the Liberals announced their 70% increase in military spending over 10 years, he actually criticized them for not putting enough of that money up front, like, you know, right away. It was too much of the 70% increase was later on down the line. While many within the NDP, I would venture to guess the majority of the party wants to go in a different direction of, you know, taking that money to put it into social programs, to, you know, not be belligerent in Russia's border. The handful of people that are in charge of NDP foreign policy are totally supportive of NATO, of the Five Eyes, of Canadian militarism. Mm-hmm.
Again, it's Eve Engler, eveengler.com. And does the NDP want a war with Russia? You know, Eve, this business, again, of not talking about the political context is really worrying. I mean, take, for example, you mentioned that she, Heather McPherson, gave an interview. She was speaking to a Ukrainian-Canadian organization. So she, use the word pandered. They have an agenda, and she seems to be agreeing with it. But, you know, most Ukrainians live in Ukraine, and they had a leader, Poroshenko, who they really got kind of tired of, because all he ever did was talk about war. And if I recollect right, Mr. Zelensky said he was going to do something to put an end to this and not try to solve things by military means. You would have thought that the NDP would have bought into that and remind Canadians, well, look, there are already agreements. There's the Minsk agreement about how to solve this. Now, I understand that Mr. Zelensky has, once again, he'd made a U-turn, but that idea, which direction are we going to go? My guess is that the Ukrainians, like the Canadians, would rather not have this any hint of trying to solve this by force. And you know, you could help us. I'd like to know.
I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward. What you're pointing out is that the NDP and Canada in general has been supporting the forces within the Ukraine that, you know, are into being belligerent or into ramping up tension, and that's, you know, we're supporting, you know, open neo-Nazis, and it's you know, if it was the Stephen Harper government, and when it was the Stephen Harper government, that was happening, and that at least had some, you could argue, some like ideological sense. The fact that the NDP is doing that and acts like those political dynamics within the Ukraine don't exist I think should be, you know, serious shame for most NDP members. But I also think that the broader thing, that from the standpoint of, you know, U.S. empire, Ukraine is we use it to try to weaken Russia. We don't really care what happens to the Ukraine, right? It's obviously Ukrainians, that's a different story. They have a lot more self-interest in avoiding war and all that comes with that. But I think that the organized Ukrainian Canadian community is has been very much, you know, this goes back decades and decades, has been very much organized into a anti-Russia, anti-Moscow, anti-communist kind of whatever.
By the way, we are living in a time when people actually, our leaders, speak of the Russian leadership as though they're Bolsheviks. It's amazing. They even sometimes get confused and call it the Soviet Union, which it no longer exists. There is a kind of madness in our culture that we no longer address reality. We're living in this ideological war, and all the ideology is being provided by Washington and Ottawa and London.
And I think you need to justify military spending, you need an enemy. And even if, you know, Russia has shown desperately that it doesn't want to be in conflict with Western Europe and North America. The power brokers in Washington and Ottawa, they want an enemy to target, and I think that also there is a geopolitical, increasingly Russia has provided some check to U.S. power in Syria, a little bit of that example in Venezuela and a few other places, and the Canadian government is of course completely on board with war and regime change in Syria, obviously even more actively in Venezuela. And so in those places where Russia provides a bit of a check or counterbalance to untrampled U.S. power, that's obviously angers people in Ottawa.
Well, I mean, that is what the problem is actually with Russia, is it not? That it has stopped being a go-along state, but has said, no, there are things we will not do. There are things that we intend to do on our own. And by the way, they make reference, and I hope you agree. I mean, this is one of those things where we're living in, they have invented a language for us, Chrystia Freeland, Trudeau, Obama and others, the rules-based order. And of course the answer would be, you're referring, are you not, to international law and the United Nations? What have you created here? That we're all supposed to have this funny talk that comes out of NATO, which is really only a nasty interest group that intends to try to have hegemony over the world. It's not the United Nations. Nobody voted for their ideas, right?
Yeah, I mean, the hypocrisy of the rules-based international order is, you can find example after example from, interference in Ukrainian affairs in 2014 to getting rid of a government. Today, you find the Trudeau government is sending naval vessels around the South China Sea in provocative maneuvers, and they say it's all about the rules-based order, while their main ally, the U.S., hasn't signed the law of the sea, right? The U.S., one of the only countries in the world, refuses to sign UNCLOS, the law of the sea, to the fact that the Trudeau government says it wants rules-based order, won't sign the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, which is about advancing the rules-based order, to all the sanctions policy, these sanctions that Canada is adopting and really ramping up. And that's the Trudeau government that's really ramping up Canada's whole sanctions regime, which the recent special rapporteur for unilateral, forget the full name of her position, but she did a recent event with the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute and the Canadian Latin America Alliance. And she said that basically, in her estimation, Canada's Magnitsky sanctions are basically contravening international law. So there's example after example of the Trudeau government violating the UN Charter, international law, while they just go on and on and on about upholding the rules-based international order. And there's almost no, there's no one basically in the dominant media that even bothers to question that, right? Like the sanctions policy, I don't think there's been any discussion in the dominant media in this country, just even ask the question, because it is, international law with sanctions isn't totally clear, right? But you should at least have a discussion, interview the UN Special Rapporteur on unilateral coercive measures and ask her what her legal opinion is about Canadian sanctions. And that just doesn't happen. It's just what the government says is the starting point of the whole discussion. And they say they believe in the international rules-based order, and therefore the dominant media reports that the Canadian government believes in international rules-based order.
Yeah, it's like we're on a part of a group of drunken sailors or something. This thing with NATO, they don't even question NATO's own. NATO at the moment, as far as I can tell, is in violation of its own charter. Troops in Afghanistan participated in the bombing Libya, Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was outside the zone that NATO defines for itself, they don't revisit that. They don't. Nobody says, excuse me, I'm a member of this organization. We are. We really don't have a mandate to be there. You know, establish a foundation of a really of a what would it be an argument the Canadian people would appreciate, because you know we are being put at risk by these daring characters who don't even don't obey their own charters.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the direct nature of Canadians being put at risk is not that significant, and that's part of why how they can get away with doing what they're getting away with. But I believe that you know, indirectly. I mean, this is what I find kind of astounding to see with some of the people on the left that get they go along with this sort of bashing of Russia or bashing of China. Is that first of all, you got like questions about, you know, if you call yourself a Green Party, so the Green Party of Canada has gone along with all this. Well, you say you care about the environment, but you know, decarbonization, demilitarization, and decarbonization are things that need to go hand in hand. There's the military is Canada's biggest emitter of greenhouse gases. Then, if you go at a more macro level, the whole idea that we can overcome so many of these global problems we have, like, you know, the climate crisis, we can't overcome that if we're in a state of war, or a cold war, or whatever you want to call it, with China and Russia. I mean, you're just not going to overcome these like macro global issues with that kind of tension existing. I mean, we're probably not even going to be able to overcome them anyways, right? Even minus all this added tension. And then you see that, you know, you first of all, it starts with this, Putin is so bad. And then the military and CSIS, then their budget comes up, and then they're talking about how, you know, we don't have the resources to challenge Putin's cyber attacks against Canada. We don't have the resources to, well, so we need to devote more resources to CSIS. We need to devote more resources to the communication security established, more resources to the military, because, you know, the bad human rights violations of China or Russia or... And so next thing you know, well, we got to put more, take away from education, take away from healthcare, take away from water on reserves, and we got to be putting it into the whole military security apparatus. But you know, that's the I think that much of this comes down to the power of the dominant media, and the dominant media is just so on board. And I think and specifically with regards to like the NDP, is that they. They basically fear being attacked by the dominant media. It's not the matter that most NDP members aren't you know, sympathetic to withdrawing from NATO, or even most NDP voters. What they're concerned about is that if they get offside on foreign policy issues, particularly the macro foreign policy issues like China, like militarism, Russia, that will just lead to a whole wave of condemnation in the dominant media, which it will. It will lead to that wave of condemnation. And so they basically avoid getting offside. Sometimes, you know, in some small forum, they're willing to say that Canada should pull out of the Lima group with regards to Venezuela, or in some sort of small forum. But for the most part, they try to basically just go along with the dominant ethos. And then in some instances where there's viewed as a you know, sort of right-wing ethnic bloc, like the, you know, Ukrainian Canadian kind of organized Ukrainian Canadian community, then they pander. They go even, you know, further to the right than the governing party, and then they pander. But they're basically just align with the broad ethos of the dominant media, and they, you know, do everything they can to avoid getting offside with the big media on these issues.
Yeah, they're absolutely intimidated, and it is a. I've talked to a number of NDPers over the years. I know you have, of course, everybody. They're trying to figure out why they do what they do, and they live in terror of a Toronto Star headline that, or their inability to get themselves reported there. Which, I mean, that makes them so dependent that they have to echo the, you know, the mainstream line on militarism or the economy for fear of being baited or ignored, I guess, which is the worst thing that could possibly happen. It is interesting, though, to go back to the history. There was that an attempt, say, with Tommy Douglas, and I've interviewed your father about the, you know, was winning Medicare and all that. There used to be some voices, certainly Tommy Douglas's voice. He would have been all over this subject. He might have even asked the great question that you posed at the conclusion of one of your articles on the, on this business of the United States deciding it's going to protect freedom of the seas. And the question is, well, how can you be sending warships alongside of somebody who says he's going to enforce the law when he himself has never agreed to the law? I mean, you'd think that somebody could really make a name for himself or herself in parliament by saying, let's just put a simple question. Why are we following a country that says it doesn't follow the law? It won't even agree to it.
Yeah, I don't even think there's been a question in parliament or you know, even on Twitter from an NDP MP about Canada sending naval vessels to the South China Sea. And this has been going on for multiple years of Canada joining the U.S. in doing so. And there's to the best of my knowledge, there hasn't been a single MP that's asked a kind of critical question of this anywhere, let alone, you know, delving into the hypocrisy of we say we're doing this to stand up for the international rules-based order, while the person we're following, the U.S., refused to sign the United Nations convention on the law of sea, on law of the sea. But again, this gets into having some form of you know, critical kind of media and critical kind of foreign policy. Like, you know, the NDP, they went along with the whole Magnitsky Act with the sanctions, right? The NDP, they voted for that in 2017. Though I have to say, very interesting, Don Davies, who participated in this event with the UN Special Rapporteur on unilateral economic measures of sanctions, about a month ago, Don Davies, who's the NDP MP in Vancouver, he was quite critical of sanctions. He said some, I was very impressed, very strong kind of critical stuff of sanctions. And Don Davies is a lawyer. They know that this is tenuous from the standpoint of international law. Don Davies certainly knows it. It's just, I guess, viewed as not politically expedient to really delve into it in any serious way.
Well, we've been talking to Eve Engler. Eve, your articles are all right there to provide them with some backbone if they will take your lead on that point. I'm convinced that all we need is a couple of voices, and people would be happy to rally, because the Canadians are fed up with following Americans all in all for every one of their crazy adventures. Well, Eve, another question I want to, and then bringing it back to Ukraine, in your article, the NDP says, well, we have to go with the MAP, and I would like to know, from your vantage point, shouldn't we be asking, well, there is a formula and there's a thing called the Minsk Agreement. What is the NDP's position on the Minsk Agreement? What is the position of the Conservative Party? Why aren't we looking at that, since that is the only agreed to formula for peace?
Yeah, well, I think that the NDP, they probably, if we're asked directly, they would probably say they support the Minsk Agreement, but in practice they don't. And in practice they don't, because it's framed.
If we don't put that in front of people, how is it going to get solved? I mean, they're sort of killing it by neglect, right?
No, for sure. But the media reports in recent days are quite explicit about that. CBC and Globe and Mail are basically like, the Minsk Agreement is just a pro-Putin document that it was only because the forces in the pro-Russian forces in the east of the country were strong at that point, and therefore that's how it's been portrayed in recent days. obviously because they are behind the idea of ramping up, you know, foreign troops in the Ukraine. They're behind the idea of bringing Ukraine into NATO, and also, you know, the broader policy of Canadian troops in Latvia and whatnot. But yeah, negotiated solution seems to be the sensible option for the majority of people. But
well, I believe among the signatories of the agreement are France is a part of that.
Yeah, I think it's France, Germany,
and Union.
Yeah, no, it's I mean, I'm not saying that that's a correct analysis of the Minsk agreement, that it's just a, you know, Russian, but that's how it's being portrayed in the quite aggressively in both the Globe. I've seen recent articles in recent days from the Globe and the CBC making that point. They're just trying to, you know, dismiss it because they want a more aggressive posture towards Russia.
But that truly exposes, doesn't it? I mean, this is a hypocritical lying exercise, because you have an agreement, nobody has actually thrown it out, but you pretend it's not there, and which makes, you know, frankly, the NDP position, as stated by this person, McPherson, is warmongering, frankly.
Oh, I think it's for sure warmer. I mean, the logic of NATO, my understanding is that if a member of NATO is, the alliance is based upon collective defense. So if Ukraine enters NATO at a time when they're claiming that Russia, you know, occupies Crimea and that they're backing forces in eastern Ukraine, they're basically saying, we want to go to war with Russia. We want to bring this into alliance, and then we're going to go to war with Russia to defend the Ukraine. That's the logic of the NDP position. You know, she would deny that, but that is the actual logic of the position. And yeah, it's not a negotiated, not about Minsk agreement. It's not about negotiation. It's about aggressiveness and militarism.
And tear up the only formula we have for a peaceful settlement. Eve Engler, boy, your writing has never been more timely. I appreciate very much your being with us. EveEngler.com. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.